T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome, welcome. It's 3:08. Jordana Green here. Thank you for spending or choosing to spend some time with me this afternoon. And it looks beautiful. The hail has stopped. The snow has stopped, at least outside my window, that is. Maybe up north it's still coming. And the skies are blue and sunny. But oh my goodness, when I was out walking the dog today, it was hailing on us. So here we are. It does amaze me how we Minnesotans are always surprised at the first snow. Like, it's October 16th. I mean, it's gonna snow. So I hope you are doing your best to enjoy it, taking it all in, welcoming back the flakes to Minnesota, and maybe getting outside a little bit. I definitely needed to get outside after the dueling town halls that happened last night. I actually watched the Trump town hall. I was very interested to hear what he had to say in an environment that wasn't as acrimonious as the last one, where they were talking all over each other. I respect Savannah Guthrie. I thought she did a great job. I also probably knew what Joe Biden was going to say during his town hall. So I watched the Donald Trump one. Dan, you watched both, right? You kept flipping back and forth because you couldn't get enough.
Sure. Yeah, let's go with that. Or I just watched highlights this morning. It's one of the two, definitely.
There you go. Yeah. There's that too. And that's okay. And if you watched highlights this morning, that is okay. That's all you have to do. You do not want to get inundated and overwhelmed with the news or anybody yelling or fighting or telling lies. So I totally get that. I just pulled a couple highlights for you. I like to watch these town halls with and keep Daniel Dale from CNN. He's the fact checker for CNN. And PolitiFact, I keep those up because I appreciate the truth, and I always want to know what the truth is. And before we get into just a couple of fact-checking on both of them, Biden and Trump, I found this tidbit quite interesting. Dan sent this to me. Oh, because President Trump makes a very big deal about ratings and who's watching what and how many people come to his inauguration and his rallies— I did look into the ratings for last night, which I thought for sure Trump would win in the ratings because he is so gregarious and has such an, I need to find a kind word, Dan, unusual personality that I figured people would want to watch. And hey, I contributed to the ratings because I watched his town hall. But the ratings so far, which, you know, kind of keep coming in and they keep counting, so far look like this. Biden was averaging 13.9 million total viewers on ABC, which is owned by Disney, while President Trump was at 13.1 million across MSNBC, NBC, and CNBC combined. Now, the early numbers for the two cable networks, which are, you know, MSNBC and CNBC, 1.9 million viewers and CNBC around 700 million, meaning that Biden was beating Trump 13.9 million to 10.7 million in the direct broadcast battle. I was shocked about that. I just thought everybody would know what Biden was going to say. You knew it was going to be much calmer, and maybe people are ready for some calm. But I was surprised about that, and I can imagine that our president is none too happy about that. But a couple of highlights, or maybe they're lowlights, because I'm pointing out some facts that need to be corrected because they were not facts when they were spoken last night. Dan, we're going to go back and forth here. I believe there was a question, or President Trump told Savannah Guthrie and those in Miami about the economy.
Our economy is going to be phenomenal next year. We're going to have a phenomenal. And I'll tell you, Savannah, we had the greatest economy in the history of our country last year, including the state of Florida, where we are now, and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Ohio, every place. We had the greatest economy we ever had.
So that's interesting. The greatest economy in the history of our country. According to the Associated Press, the numbers show that it was not the greatest in U.S. history. The U.S. did have the most jobs on record before the coronavirus pandemic, but that also was because population growth. We have the most people in the U.S. right now. The 3.5% unemployment rate before the recession was at a half-century low, but the percentage of people working or searching for jobs was still below a year 2000 peak. And an economist, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, Paul Romer, looked at President Trump's economic growth record just this month. He said growth under Trump averaged 2.4% annually before the pandemic. So let's take the pandemic out, because that's not fair. You know, that's, most presidents don't get a pandemic, and Trump had one, has one. So before the pandemic, he averaged 2.48 annually, only slightly better than the 2.41 gains during Barack Obama's second term. But by contrast, the economic expansion that began in 1982 during Ronald Reagan's presidency was 4.2% a year. So a lot more right there. So not the greatest economy in U.S. history. So that was false that Mr. Trump said. Let's talk about crime. This is Vice President Biden on the crime bill that he and Barack Obama passed.
The Black Caucus voted for it. Every black mayor supported it across the board. And it didn't. The crime bill itself did not have mandatory sentences except for two things. What it had three strikes and you're out, which I voted against in the crime bill. But it had a lot of other things in it that turned out to be both bad and good.
Okay, so that's misleading. So that is misleading on Biden's stance. He's understanding the impact of the bill and the influence that it had to get to get passed into law. Biden wrote and voted for the sweeping 1994 crime bill, which included money for more prisons, expanded use of the federal death penalty, called for mandatory life sentences for three-time violent offenders, you know, three strikes and you're out kind of thing. He then, of course, retracted that and called the three strikes rule wacko. That was his words. Even as he was writing that bill, he called it wacko. But the fact is that that bill has been seen in the Black Lives Matter era as very heavy-handed and a discriminatory tool of the justice system. I have a couple of more fact checks. I promise we're going to revisit this a little bit later in the show, but we do have to take a quick break. I want to talk about getting kids invested in this election. I have an expert on up next. Welcome back. It's 3:19. Jordana here. Paul is on his way out east. He will be checking back with us on a visit from his father, Folker. Here are the Folker files. That is next week. I'm thrilled that you are joining me. Let's talk elections. Are you ready to make your vote count? You can still register in person. Vote early, vote by mail, or hit the polls November 3rd. If you mail in a ballot, friends, it has to be postmarked by Election Day and received by November 10th. Now, for everything you need to know about voting, go to vote411.org. It will tell you everything you need to know. I got a mail-in ballot, but I got a little nervous about the post office. So I walked it over to the police station where I could turn it in. And that is what I did. My husband voted by mail. He checked online and he knows his vote was received. So there's lots of ways to ensure that you can get your voting done. You got time. So please make your vote count. Vote411.org. Our next guest is also very engaged in getting kids involved in voting. Eric Nelson is a high school social studies teacher in Forest Lake. He was getting a little frustrated that his students weren't engaging in the curriculum, but they had plenty of interest in each other and, of course, on their phones. He said, you know what? I am going to make this phone thing work for me. He said that's when Fan School was born. Today it's called the Election Challenge Game, and it's being used by thousands of students across the country. Eric Nelson is joining us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Eric, so happy to have you on the show.
Fun to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, what is the Election Challenge Game?
Yeah, so you can go to fanschool.org/election to sign up, and you can commission a free league with your class, family, or friends, and students can enter it even without a league. But picture a March Madness-like format where you make predictions over a series of rounds, and you use a map of the United States. So round one is solid states. Round two is lean states, and then round three and four ask you about battleground states and to predict what voter turnout rates will be. And the idea here is that students are essentially staying curious about the election and how the Electoral College works in a format that's much more exciting and fun, like a March Madness culture system.
So it's also, I was reading, it's like a fantasy football team. Also, I believe that you've created this. Is that where you got the model?
Absolutely, yeah. So like you said, I was really frustrated that students were glued to their phones, but not really paying attention to what was happening in the world and how it was all connected. And so, you know, when I was playing fantasy sports with my buddies, I just realized that it was actually, I was learning a ton. I was reading a ton of news, and it was all fun. And so basically we started drafting countries in my classroom and scoring points for those countries. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of realized there was all of this stuff that exists in the world of sports, for instance, March Madness-like prediction contests that we could utilize during events that matter, like elections. And we've done a game for the Olympics as well.
You say students are given prompts throughout the process. You know, they're reading articles, they're talking about the Electoral College. Obviously, they're learning throughout playing the game. So talk to me about where the learning comes in.
Yeah, totally. So I sort of realized in my classroom that if I was the deliverer of the news or the assignment or the lesson, and you even used the word prompt, right? If you even say those words, sometimes you're getting those things from adults, you immediately turn off as a student. So what I realized that if we just created a space for play and brought all that information together, students would naturally stay curious, and we could sort of keep them fans of school. And so the idea here is to sort of keep you clicking on the map, put you into the system we call the Electoral College, so you can learn about federalism and states and what's, you know, what else is on your ballot, for instance. There's also links to fundraising. And just put all of that stuff into the experience so that students can stay curious and explore it on their own.
And there is a winner. So what are the points and how are they tallied up? Because it's often very predictable who's going to go red, who's going to go blue.
Yeah, totally. It's very predictable in the first rounds. So what happens is on election day, what will probably be election week this year, is that everybody will sort of tune in and the states will be scored. And so, you know, usually what happens is on election night, those, you know, leaning states get called, you know, later in the night, and so they go red or blue, and you get points for those things. And so as the rounds go and as the election goes, you get more and more points. And so the battleground states, for instance, are worth 10 points each, and so as those get called, the leaderboard changes based on who can sort of predict which states matter most in the Electoral College, and then which states are sort of participating most.
And there's a monetary prize?
Totally, yeah. So it's $1,000 for the student winner. And we are awarding a top predictor and a top publisher. So students can also publish about what they're learning, anything related to election and politics. And we're giving $1,000 to a publisher as well throughout November.
Now, tens of thousands of students are using this. It has its own administrators in different schools. So why do you, this kind of spread like wildfire. Were you surprised?
No, I wasn't surprised. You know, we hope everybody in the nation wants to play, but I think it's a fun way to sort of learn. And there were more than 10,000 who submitted in 2016, 10,000 students. And we saw that a ninth grader in Indiana sort of outpredicted the country. And
wow.
It was really interesting. It was really interesting to sort of see what students were thinking and then, you know, sort of what they were learning too on a national level. And so, you know, we talk a lot about student voice, but mm-hmm. we don't let them, a lot of them, vote yet. And so this is sort of a great way to participate in the process.
Yeah, my 17-year-old is just livid that she can't vote this year. But alas, we have rules.
The history of that change is really interesting, too.
Of the age range, but being allowed to vote, you mean?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, during the Vietnam War is when it shifted to 18, and there's current legislation about shifting it to 16, too. So.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Well, I'll have to come back later and talk about that.
Yeah,
I know, I should. So is it just for students? Because I have a feeling some people in our audience are like, hey, I can get on board with that. And A, is it just for students? And B, is it free? Or is there a fee?
Yes, totally free for any students to enter the national challenge. And mm-hmm. It's also totally free for anyone to commission a league. So if you are a parent at home with kids and a bunch of other kids probably these days, or you're mm-hmm. a teacher, it's sort of built for classrooms, but anyone in their neighborhood or their family can commission a free league at fanschool.org/election.
That's awesome. So the deadline to submit the predictions is midnight Pacific time on November 2nd, and folks can sign up at fanschool.org. Is that right?
Yes, fanschool.org/election.
Anything I didn't ask you or you want to throw in, Eric?
We'd love to have you play and participate with us.
Wonderful. Eric Nelson, a teacher in Forest Lake. You're still teaching up there, right?
I'm not teaching anymore. It started in my classroom, but grew big enough where I'm working on it full time now.
Good for you. Get that side gig into a full-time hustle. I'm sure they miss you as a teacher, but we're glad now you have sort of a national reach as a teacher. Eric Nelson, if you want to sign up, it's fanschool.org. Thank you so much for creating this and for joining us today.
Thank you. Game on.
You got it, sir. How fun is that? Right? You want to get the kids involved. You want to teach them about it. My ninth grader and I are having conversations about the Electoral College and federalism and the co-equal branches of government. I love that stuff. So in his civics class, he's learning all about it. But this is a terrific way to get kids involved and get them learning. When we come back, we're going to breathe. We'll be breathing for the cold weather. Mm-hmm. And then Tim Lammers will join us with his streaming reviews next on CCO. Ah, oh, time to breathe, friends. 3:34, Jordana Green. So here in Minnesota, it was cold this morning. It was really cold. Cold enough for me to cut the dog's walk short because my toes, I was missing the feeling in them. I'm not ready, but it is Minnesota, so we have to get ready. So I chose the Wim Hof breathing method for breathing today. You know, Wim Hof is that guy who jumps in frozen lakes and feels that being cold is sort of the secret to longevity and health. So I figured he's got a breathing technique to keep our bodies warm while we're in the frozen lake. And you know what? He does. So today on WCCO Radio and on Instagram Live at Jordana Verde, we're doing the Wim Hof breathing exercise. All right, get comfortable, close your eyes, be conscious of your breath, and then Wim says you should take 30 to 40 deep, short breaths like this. of them. He does warn you might experience lightheadedness or a tingling sensation in your feet and fingers. He says they are completely harmless. After you've finished 30 to 40 of those, after the last exhale, he wants you to inhale one final time as deeply as you can, and then let all the air out. At the bottom of that exhale, hold it. Try not to breathe for as long as you can. And when you can't hold it anymore, draw in one big breath to fill your lungs, feel your chest expanding. And when you're at full capacity, he wants you to hold that breath for 15 seconds. That completes round one. He says complete the cycle 3 to 4 times. Wim Hof breathing. Short inhales and exhales powerfully for 30 to 40. After the last exhalation, he wants you to exhale and don't breathe for as long as you can. When you can't hold it any longer, big inhale, hold that for 15 seconds and keep going. He says this will control your inner fire. It will help relax your subconscious and relax your nervous system and keep you warm in the cold. Wim Hof method of breathing. Thanks for breathing with me. We now go to Tim Lammers.
He knows what movies are worth watching and what ones aren't. And if you're streaming shows, he's got your hits and misses there too. Here's Tim Lammers, brought to you by Bradshaw and Bryant.
This boyfriend you have, Salcom 40?
Had. We split up a while ago.
Oh, when was the last time that you saw him?
Yesterday.
What were the circumstances?
Solid gold.
He came asking for money. I said no.
Did he threaten you?
No.
Did he become physical with you?
No.
Oh boy, I don't know what that. I want to know what that splat was at the end. But Tim Lammers' streaming reviews are brought to us by Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys seeking justice for the injured. You can find them at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. Tim, this one is called An Imperfect Murder.
It is an imperfect murder, and it's an imperfect movie. I'd rather be doing the Wim Hof breathing so I could free my mind. Of course, we have to dip back to one of our previous streaming segments where he was featured on what show?
Oh, on you mean Wim Hof?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. Oh, the Gwyneth Paltrow show, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. I remember watching that one, yes.
The most normal episode out of that very oddly entertaining show.
I know, that was crazy. The Goop show. The Goop Lab.
I should watch
the rest of them.
But anyway, yeah, so I'm not really excited about talking about an imperfect murder. Look, it was actually made and put out in 2017 in terms of film festival play. It played at Venice. Nobody picked it up. The director, James Toback, got into a Me Too controversy, so I'm sure nobody wanted to touch the damaged goods. Finally, after 3 years, somebody took the initiative to put it on video on demand. You got Sienna Miller. You have Alec Baldwin. Where could you go wrong?
Right.
The answer is everywhere you go wrong. You know, it's just one of these deals. She's an actress. She accidentally kills her abusive ex. He pulls a gun on her. They wrestle. The gun goes off. He's dead. You call the police, right? Well, she does, and then she hangs up and decides to cover up the shooting instead, which, you know, if you did that,
naturally,
it'd be a 10-minute movie. So, it's just a bunch of bizarre scenes after that. It ends bizarrely. The music is bizarre. Alec Baldwin it's a bait and switch. He's on the poster. His name is above the title. He's in the movie for 5 minutes. Charles Grodin, same thing. Great actor. 5 minutes. It's Sienna Miller's movie, and I really like her a lot, but it just goes to show you that everything, again, as I said before, I mean, everything looks good on paper. Nobody intends to make a bad movie. It's just sometimes when you get it in editing or whatever, it just doesn't come together, and nothing really came together for this movie.
All right, let's be done with that one and move on to The Doorman, starring Ruby Rose.
What's a decorated soldier doing here as a doorman? They're here.
They have to be.
It's a bloody Rembrandt.
You should walk away now.
And if you don't, I will take you to hell.
Ooh.
With a line like that, you know it's going to be an action movie. Ruby Rose, CW's Batwoman. She was also in Orange is the New Black and John Wick 2. She knows martial arts. She knows the moves. And she's, you know, works quite well, those skills, for this movie. She is protecting a family in a vacant hotel because everybody's out because the hotel is being renovated, and there is art hidden in the walls of one of the apartments, and these people are vicious. John Renault is the bad guy. You might have recognized his voice. So she puts her particular set of skills to work. She's a Marine veteran. So, look, acting is weak. Story's predictable, but if you like action, this movie has it. This is one of those deals where, okay, put the brain cells on hold. You know, enjoy it if that's what you like. You know, it's not groundbreaking by any means, but it's solid. It does the job.
So I want to save some time because I know I'm late to this party, the Mandalorian party, and you told me to watch it ages ago, but I finally did. And I know Dan Cook is a big fan, too, but I loved it. First of all, I'm a Star Wars fan anyway, but this was just so well done at such high-end production. Did you love it as much as I did?
I did. And you know what's amazing about that first episode? Spoiler, 3, 2, 1. You don't see Baby Yoda until the very last scene. So it's
so
like
cute.
What was already felt like a great series became even greater once you introduced that character, which really just took it into the stratosphere. So you caught on at the right time, Jordana, because it is October 30th is the premiere date for season 2. They don't dump all the episodes at once, so it's going to be spread over 8 weeks.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it really brings Star Wars into an entirely new dimension. What do you think, Dan? I know because you're a big Star Wars fan.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and Jordana as well. And I know both of you are. So
not like Dan.
Your feelings about this new direction with TV? I love it.
I do. You know, it was interesting, like you talked about, that they drop the one episode at a time rather than letting you binge it. Because you're so used to binging now that when the first episode or two came out, it was like, well, no, I want to keep going. What are we, you know, these are 27, 30-minute episodes. I mean, they're not terribly long.
Right.
But I really do believe that forcing you to take it 1 week at a time builds anticipation. As much as we love binging, it does, you know, you're waiting and you have a chance then. You know, all my nerdy friends that love Star Wars were talking about it during the week. Okay, what did you see? What did you think? They did this callback. They did this, you know, fan service. They did this, you know, that and the other thing. And it was a lot of fun, and I cannot wait for the next season.
Yeah, one thing I would suggest is, you know, the new episodes drop on Fridays. So the spoilers, that's a good thing about not having it out there all at once, because people will totally spoil it on social media. So you have to avoid social media pretty much all day Friday, Jordana, if you don't watch it like right after midnight, you know, on Thursday.
Yeah.
Because there are just so many wonderful surprises. I think that's what I love about it, because it all does tie into the Star Wars universe, which is pretty cool.
Yes. No, I'm really enjoying it. And Mark and I, when it was over, we're like, wait, that's it? You know, because the episodes are short and there were only a few of them. We could binge because we came so late to that party. They were all out already, but very much looking forward to having it back.
There's a show called Star Wars or Mandalorian Gallery on Disney Plus about the making of the show. Just as fascinating.
That's fun.
So check out that documentary in the next couple of weeks before the new season drops.
Tim, I don't know if you've started watching Tehran. Have you watched this?
No, that's on Apple TV Plus, correct?
Yeah, it is. And Mark and I just started. I think it's just a couple. They drop also every week. There are only like 5 or 6 episodes, but really enjoying it, you know, about the Mossad, about terrorism, about it's about, you know, the Iranian-Israeli conflict. Very interesting stuff. And we'll talk about that another time because you and I are
out. Yeah, I'll check into it for one of my streaming segment reviews. You know, this stuff is arriving just in time for the snow, right, when we're inside
Amen.
Again.
Amen. That's right. We're inside now. Tim Lammers, always great to talk with you. Have a great weekend, my friend.
You too. We'll talk next Tuesday.
You got it. Thanks, Tim. Coming up, Sloan Martin is going to preview Behind the Ballot. It's our WCCO news series that kicks off Monday. That's next. Welcome back. It's 3:51. Jordana Green here. Paul out visiting Folker, his dad. Out east, you will hear from him next week. Sloan Martin is joining us from the newsroom. The newsroom is starting a new series called Behind the Ballot. It kicks off on Monday, and Sloan's here to preview it. Thanks so much, Sloan.
Hey, Jordana. Yeah, this will be something that's pretty familiar to, you know, longtime WCCO listeners. It's something we do before these big elections, but we know how historic this one is. And I know through the interviews that I've already gotten, mine's not even airing, or at least my second one is not even airing till just before Halloween. But the interviews that I've gotten so far, just talking about the momentum of this kind of election, that it really is how one professor put it to me, one history professor, that this really is a moratorium on America. So this is how important this election is. And, you know, we know about the divisiveness that has really, you know, occurred in our country over the last couple of years. And this is a really big moment. So we're going to be looking at not only the most competitive races. We are not looking at the 4th and 5th congressional district. That's, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul, basically, because those usually are going to go blue. But we do have, you know, we're going to be talking in great depth from experts and people who live there about races in the 1st congressional district. That's, of course, southern Minnesota, the 8th, northern Minnesota, the 7th, western Minnesota. Can Colin Peterson, you know, continue to keep his longtime seat? Obviously, of course, the Senate race with Tina Smith and Jason Lewis, and then a lot of different topics. And there's so many to really choose from, so many different angles in this election, Jordana. One that I'm doing is about the impact of George Floyd's death and Black Lives Matter. We're going to talk about the impact of Gen Z and young voters. We've seen, especially since the Parkland mass shooting, how this young generation, many voting for the first time in this election, are going to have an impact. Looking at mail-in or non-in-person voting, and things like that, the cities versus rural. It's a really comprehensive series to look at this historic election, because surely it will be, from every angle possible.
I know you've already done a lot of your interviews. Obviously, you're planning a lot of your series. What has surprised you, Sloan, about answers that people have given you about voting, about the political climate, you know, just anything about the current state of events?
You know, it's tough because it is a momentous kind of election, and it's hard to think about it that way when you're going through it, and we're citizens at the same time during this election. And I'll say something that did surprise me, but it shouldn't have. And that is that you cannot separate anything, any conversation about what's going on really in any kind of facet of our society, but especially this election, that even though, you know, like my subject matter, for example, isn't COVID-19 in particular, everything's going to relate back to that. It's going to relate back to how safe people feel and how they vote, seeing 215,000 Americans dead in the last 7 months. They're going to vote based on how they see the response to COVID-19. So there is really no escaping it. Even when you try and look at these different angles, these different intersections of how, you know, this election in particular affects so many different kinds of Americans, it really is always going to direct back to COVID-19.
That's really interesting. Were people ever angry with you for asking questions about politics, or did you feel a lot of passion and energy behind the answers?
You know, my particular subject matter, I did not. So my, I'm looking at the 1st congressional district, and then also the impact of Black Lives Matter, and really looking at it from a racial lens. So to me, I found people who are very interested in talking about this, because could we see something like what happened in 2008 with, you know, Black Americans who came out to vote for Barack Obama, and some of the largest droves and voter participation for that group that we've seen? Could that happen again here, especially after the death of George Floyd? And again, looking at COVID-19, the disparate impact on communities of color and Black people in particular, how this illness has affected them being on the front lines and then also dying at a higher rate. So that is what's interesting to me. And people have been really, I think, interested in talking about that. But okay. I wonder, too, about, for example, like Susie, she's going to be talking about the suburbs and how they are viewing this election. They played a really big role in 2018, a couple of races swinging blue, but also that city and rural divide as well. I think that's really where you see a lot of this divisiveness. So tune in for Susie's projects. She's got some interesting ones, too.
Sloan Martin, thank you so much. Again, Behind the Ballot starts on Monday. When we get back, a woman who went undercover into the world of white supremacy. Hear her story next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.